Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. And heading into the long weekend at this halfway mark of 2022, we're airing some of our favorite interviews of the year so far. To end the hour, a love story of sorts. When Lindsey Vonn first got acquainted with skiing, it was love at first sight. She writes in her memoir, Rise, "I felt more at home on the hill than I did in the classroom or even hanging out with friends. The ski slope was where I belonged. Life just made more sense when I was going downhill fast, so I spent as much time doing it as possible." Vonn was the first American woman to capture downhill gold at the Olympics. She has 4 overall World Cup titles and is one of only 6 women to have won World Cup races in all 5 alpine skiing categories. Statistically, according to number crunchers over at 538.com, Lindsey Vonn is not just the most decorated American female skier, she's the most decorated American skier, period. But being at the top of your field doesn't mean you'll be a stranger to life's challenges. Vonn's mother had a stroke when she was pregnant with Lindsey. Her mom survived but struggled. Her parents divorced. Lindsey divorced. She suffered from depression and found peace with the proper help and medication. And she's experienced some excruciating injuries. We'd play you tape, but to be honest, it's hard to listen to. Vonn has also faced media scrutiny, an exceedingly icky kind reserved for good-looking female athletes, and ultimately decided to stop racing professionally when she wanted to and pursue her next chapter. And yes, that is a pun, as this interview is about her memoir, Rise, My Story. So without further ado, here's my conversation with recent Olympic Hall of Fame inductee, Lindsey Vonn.
You reveal something early in the book that made me think that you were really, really a real person. You reveal that you stunk at a lot of sports. You were not.
Yes.
What did you try?
I really was bad. I tried everything. I mean, I tried gymnastics and figure skating and tennis and soccer. And I mean, the best I did at another sport was soccer, and I scored on my own team. So that can tell you how great I was at other sports.
You announced to your dad when you were around 11-ish that you were going to go to the Olympics in 2002. What did that mean to you at the time? Why were you so sure?
I was actually 9, and said that because I met, I met Peekaboo Street, who is my idol, and I met her at an autograph signing in Minnesota. And because of that, I said, this is what I want to do with my life. And so he didn't bat an eye. He was like, okay, this is what we're going to have to do. It's going to be hard, but we made a 10-year plan. And in 2002, in the Salt Lake Olympics, when I was 17, I competed in my first games.
Yeah, you write in the book that your dad always took you seriously about that. You write, he didn't bat an eye or make a joke of it or dismiss it as some kind of childhood fantasy. He took my words as seriously as I intended them. When you got to be older and a mature adult, what did he tell you about why he approached you this way?
I mean, he actually told me that he wasn't even sure if I would be anything, but he said, when I was 9, he saw me at a ski camp, and it was actually raining and lightning, and all the chairlifts were shut down. And I was out there in the rain, hiking up and down the mountain, taking run after run by myself. And it was then that he really believed that I could work hard enough to get there. But when I initially said it, apparently he tells me that he didn't entirely believe me.
You know, I mentioned in the intro that you write about your mom's health challenges in the book. She had a stroke when she was pregnant with you and you were born via emergency C-section. And she recovered, but she did have some challenges. And you mentioned that you carried her struggles with you for a while. What impact did that have on your life?
I mean, it was very much unspoken, but I knew the sacrifice that my mom had made. I mean, she literally almost died giving birth to me, and I always felt that I had a responsibility to her to do the best that I could. You know, she could never ski with me or, you know, bike with me, and you know, I always wished that she would be able to do that. But instead, I definitely took that to heart and was able to turn it into a motivation. But it was it was definitely a lot of weight. But again, I think it was really good perspective, you know, to understand that I was lucky to be in that position, and that my mom was, you know, wasn't able to do what she wanted to do.
So the people understand the kind of impact it has on a family when someone tries to pursue, it goes forward in pursuing a goal like going to the Olympics. How many times did you have to move? Where did you move? And what impact did it have, do you think, all the moving?
It had a big impact on my family, you know, especially my siblings. It was not easy for them. You know, I'm the oldest of five kids. The youngest three are triplets. And, you know, they didn't choose for that lifestyle, you know, for that lifestyle. You know, it was my goal, not theirs, but they were always very supportive. And I mean, we moved out to Colorado, and I think we moved three or four times before we finally found a townhome that we loved. But it was not an easy transition for them. You know, they missed their friends. And eventually when I moved away from home, and I was after the Olympics, everyone moved back to Minnesota, and my siblings were able to finish out high school. But they missed being with their friends the entire time they were in Colorado.
Now, who was the first person outside of your family to realize that you had a unique talent for skiing?
It was probably my coach, Eric Seiler. He was actually my father's coach as well, and he was from Austria. And I think, you know, originally I wasn't fast, but as soon as I started to figure things out and I started to show talent and promise, you know, he was the one that really communicated to my dad. I mean, my dad was oftentimes watching me train with Eric as well. But, you know, between Eric and my dad, I had a lot of support and a lot of belief in the fact that they thought that I could make it.
You know, early on, he pegged you as being naturally fast. And he said, this is so interesting. You are fast the way you are. And you described that as the best advice. Was there some unexpected challenge that being naturally fast or naturally good at something presented you?
Yeah, it was hard because I was always racing against kids older than me. And so I was never really around kids my own age. And socially that was very difficult. And I have, you know, two great friends that I grew up with, but other than that, I really can't say I have a lot of friends. And I think being fast at a young age is the reason.
You took to using men's skis. What did that do for you?
I mean, it was huge for me because it allowed me to ski the way that I wanted to. You know, it allowed me to be more powerful and to make more speed in the turns. And, you know, it was something that no one had ever thought of doing before. And I was actually ridiculed for it until, you know, the first race where, you know, I was really, really fast. And it went from being a ridiculous idea to everyone should try it.
What was different about it for the uninitiated in skiing? What were different about the men's skis that really worked for you?
Men's skis are longer than women's skis. The materials are different inside the ski. Thicker materials, heavier metal. The skis are much more difficult to bend. It takes a lot more power and strength to turn them because of the length, because of the size and the weight. So women generally ski on shorter, softer skis because it's just easier. But for me, you know, again, it allowed me to create so much more power, and it really suited my style of skiing.
You started writing taping buzzwords to your skis. And one day you wrote, I think this might've been the first time you wrote, "Be aggressive."
Yeah.
What did taping those words do for you, and why be aggressive?
You know, sometimes in the start I would just get a little bit distracted, or, you know, I'd think too much of the outcome that I wanted, or, you know, that there was a tricky section in the course. You know, when I was younger, I didn't always have the ability to block everything out. And so I thought, you know, I'll just stay focused on one thing. And so every race was different. But in the beginning, I think I mainly put "be aggressive" or "hands up" or, you know, "stay forward," things like that, where I could, you know, just literally look down on my skis and read what it said. And that the simplicity of that helped me to stay focused.
a friend of yours who's a psychologist told you she wanted to do an MRI on you because she thinks there's something about how you're wired that bypasses fear. Is that in all things or just skiing?
It's in everything. Yep, it's a problem.
Two of your favorite things we're going to talk about, media and injuries. Yay. What was the injury that you thought was the one that might have been a career ender or maybe even changed the way you'd have to live your life?
I mean, there are quite a few, but I think the first one was in the Olympics in 2006. And I caught my edge and I went off a jump backwards, landing on my back. And I thought that I had broken my back and I was helicoptered to the hospital. And, you know, that was the first time I really, really knew that I wasn't invincible, you know, that at any moment my career could be over. And it really changed the way, you know, I perceived skiing and I perceived every opportunity. And then the second one was when I broke my arm. I had a spiral fracture of my humerus and I lost feeling in my hand. I woke up from surgery and I couldn't move my hand. And I thought, you know, wow, I may never recover from this. And the doctors had no idea whether I would or not. So those were, I think, two of the scariest. And definitely, I think my arm was by far the most painful.
You know, so many people who have injuries, not just athletes, teachers, gas station attendants, nurses, have issues with painkillers, especially in the 2000s when opioids were being overprescribed by some. Were you ever worried about that? How did you avoid it?
I've obviously known that that's been a problem for so many people, but I don't. It's funny. I tolerate medication very well. I have a very high tolerance, so some of the things like Oxycontin and those things really had zero effect on me. The only medication that was a challenge for me was Percocet because when I had pain, that was the only thing that really worked, but that can be an incredible depressant. So for me, after every surgery, I tried to get off the medication as soon as possible because I always felt that it was doing more damage than good. The only thing I had to be concerned about was the pain management, but I feel like I'm pretty tough. So it usually only took about a day until I was completely off everything.
Yeah, it's important to note not all injuries can be seen. And you're very candid in your book and you write about tackling depression and getting on the right medication. And it's interesting because I posted you were going to be on the show today on our Instagram and immediately someone said promoted on Mental Health Idol, a sign. So it's which I found really interesting that people have really taken to this part of your memoir. Why did you decide to write about it?
Well, I mean, I first started talking about it in 2012, and it was really a personal decision. It was something that I felt like I needed to unload. I felt like it was such a big weight on my shoulders, and I never talked about it really with anyone. And when I was writing the book, you know, it is a big part of my life, and it wouldn't be my story if I didn't talk about it. And I also think there is no shame in talking about it. You know, everyone has their struggles, you know, whether they're mental or physical. And I just wanted to have everyone know that they have support and they can get help. And it's important not to feel isolated, important not to feel embarrassed or that there's something wrong with you because everyone deals with it.
There's a throwaway line in the book, but it speaks to having your own sense of you always wanted to look like what you look like. You write that when you were little, you had a, quote, legit mullet. And that you and you like to race in makeup and you like clothes and you look good at them. Did you receive any good advice on how to handle all the incoming commentary about your appearance?
No. I didn't know. I didn't know what to, no one told me anything about it. No one helped me really with it. And even if, you know, people tell me, you know, don't let it get to you. It's, you know, it doesn't matter what people say. It was not easy. And, you know, even today I can pretend that I have the thickest skin in the world, but things still hurt me. They still bother me. And, I think that just makes us human, but being in the spotlight is difficult and having yourself judged all the time. I mean, even with this book, I mean, especially with this book, actually, I feel like everyone comes out of the woodwork to give you their opinion on how terrible or great they think you are. And, you know, I I really try not to listen. I try not to read those comments, but it's impossible not to let it affect you at all.
I keep thinking, like, you, Simone Biles, and Serena should just get in a room and just talk it out. I want to read this one passage before we go, because it's really beautiful the way you write about skiing. You write, skiing is not a riddle you can solve. It's not something you can ever fully figure out, because the minute you do, the variables will shift. It loves to remind you that you are not the one in charge. No matter how in control you think you are in ski racing, there's no such thing as control. On the contrary, it is sort of... it makes you push yourself to the brink of losing control in a way that has never stopped being a thrill for me. When did you know it was time to retire?
I knew it was time to retire when I crashed my final season in November. I had already had 3 surgeries that summer. I had actually just been to the doctor a few days before because I had a bone bruise in my other knee. And I had torn, in that crash, I had torn my LCL and I had multiple fractures, in my tibia. So at that moment I just said, I don't know if I can do this. I wanted so badly to finish my career strong, but, you know, it was pretty clear at that point that that wasn't going to happen and that I needed to make a decision for my future beyond skiing.
That was my conversation with 3-time Olympic medalist skier and Hall of Famer Lindsey Vonn. Her memoir is called Rise. There is a lot more of the show on the way. More of our favorite interviews of 2022 coming up next hour.